the first time Lydia actually saw a woman who looked like her sister. Lydia handed Claire the cup of coffee. "Drink this. It'll help you sober up." Claire sat down at the counter. She blew on the steaming liquid to cool it. The counter stools were white leather and shiny chrome. The backs were low. They matched the couch and chairs in the family room that opened onto the kitchen. Wall-to-ceiling glass framed the backyard, where a pool that looked like it was carved from a giant slab of white marble served as a centerpiece for the barren landscape. There was no part of this house that felt inviting. Paul's cold, calculating hand could be seen behind every choice. The concrete on the entryway floor was polished to a dark mirror straight out of Snow White. The spiral stairs looked like a robot's asshole. The endless white walls made Lydia feel like she was trapped inside a straitjacket. The sooner she was out of here, the better. Lydia found a frying pan in the drawer under the cooktop. She poured some oil in the pan and dropped in two slices of bread. Claire asked, "Are you making me egg bread?" Lydia fought a reflexive smile because Claire sounded like she was 13 again. Egg bread was Lydia's way of getting out of whisking eggs. She just threw it all into a pan and cooked it until the shininess was gone. Claire said, "I'm on parole because I assaulted somebody." Lydia almost dropped the carton of eggs. "We're not supposed to call it assault, but that's what it was." Claire rolled the espresso cup between her hands. "Allison Hendrickson, my doubles partner. We were warming up for a game. She was talking about how she felt like a Holocaust survivor after the liberation because her last kid was going off to college and she was finally going to be free." Lydia cracked two eggs into the pan. She hated this bitch already. "And then Allison started telling me about this friend of hers who had a daughter who went to college last year." Claire put down the cup. "Smart girl. Always made good grades. And then the girl gets to college and goes crazy. Starts screwing around, missing classes, drinking too much, all the stupid things you hear about kids doing." Lydia used a spatula to stir the eggs around the bread. She was more than familiar with those stupid things. "One night, the girl went to a frat party. Somebody slipped a roofie into her drink. Fast forward to the next day, she wakes up naked in the basement of the frat house. She's battered and bruised, but she manages to find her way back to her dorm, where her roommate shows her a video that's been posted on YouTube." Lydia froze. Every nightmare she had about Dee going off to college involved some variation on this theme. "The guys at the frat house filmed everything. It was basically a gang rape. Allison went into great detail about it because, apparently, everyone on campus watched the film. And then she says to me, 'Can you believe that?' And I say, 'No, but of course I can believe it because people are horrible.' And then Allison says, 'That stupid girl, getting drunk like that around a bunch of frat boys, it was her own fault for going to the party.'" Claire looked as disgusted as Lydia felt. When Julia had first disappeared, people kept asking why she'd been at the bar, what she was doing out that late, and exactly how much alcohol she had consumed, because obviously it was Julia's own fault that she was abducted and most likely raped and murdered. Lydia asked, "What did you say?"
"I didn't say anything at first. I was too angry. But I didn't know I was angry, you know."
Lydia shook her head, because she always knew when she was angry.
"I kept repeating Allison's words back in my head, and the anger just built up and built up. I could feel the pressure of it in my chest, like a tea kettle coming to a boil."
Claire clasped together her hands. "Then the ball came over the net.
It was clearly on her side, but I went for it. I remember pulling my arm across my body. I've still got a killer backhand. And I watched the racket cut through the air, and at the last minute, I took this tiny lunge forward, and I smashed the edge of the racket into the side of her knee.
Holy shit.
She fell flat on her face, broke her nose and two teeth. Blood was everywhere. I thought she was going to exsanguinate. I dislocated her knee, which is apparently very painful. She ended up needing two operations to get it back into place. Claire looked remorseful, but she didn't sound it. I could have said it was a mistake. I can actually remember standing there on the court with all these excuses running through my head. Allison was writhing on the ground, screaming bloody murder, and I opened my mouth to say what a horrible accident, that I was an idiot, that I hadn't been looking where I was going, and it was all my fault, and blah, blah, blah. But instead of apologizing, I said, "It's your own fault for playing tennis." Lydia felt the shock of the act reverberate through the cold kitchen. The way the other women looked at me. Claire shook her head, as if she still couldn't believe it. I've never had people look at me like that before. There was this wave of revulsion. I could feel their disgust to my very core, and I've never told anyone this, not even Paul, but it felt so fucking good to be bad. This, at least, Claire sounded sure of. You know me, Liddy. I never let loose like that. I usually just hold it all in because what's the point of letting it out? But something about that day made me just... She held up her hands in surrender. I was absolutely euphoric right up until I was arrested. Lydia had forgotten about the egg bread. She moved the frying pan off the eye. I can't believe they let you off with parole. We bought our way out of it. Claire shrugged the shrug of the extremely wealthy. It took our lawyer a couple of months and a shit ton of money to bring the Hendricksons around, but they finally told the prosecutor they were okay with parole and the lesser charge. I had to wear an ankle bracelet for 6 months. I have 6 more sessions with a court-appointed therapist. I'm on parole for another year. Lydia didn't know what to say. Claire had never been much of a fighter. Lydia was the one who always got into trouble for giving Indian burns or holding Claire down and dangling spit into her eye. Claire said, "Ironically, the monitoring bracelet was taken off the same day that Paul was killed." She took the plate of egg bread. "Or is that just coincidence, not irony? Mother would know." Lydia had spotted the only coincidence that mattered. "When were you arrested?" Claire's tight smile made it clear that she hadn't missed the connection. "The first week of March." Julia had gone missing on March 4th, 1991. "So, that's why I'm on parole." Claire picked up the bread with her hands and took a bite. She had told the story of her arrest as if she was relating a funny thing that had happened at the grocery store. But Lydia could see that she had tears in her eyes. She looked exhausted. More than that, she looked scared. There was something about Claire that was so vulnerable. They could just as well be sitting at the kitchen table at their parents' house 3 decades ago. Claire asked, "Do you remember the way Julia used to dance?" Lydia was surprised by how clearly the memories came back. Julia had loved dancing. She would hear the faintest trace of music and throw herself completely into it.
"Too bad she had such shitty taste in music."
"It wasn't that bad."
"Really? Menudo?"
Claire gave a surprised laugh, as if she had forgotten all about her crush on the boy band. "She was just so joyful. She loved so many things." "Joyful. Lydia repeated, relishing the lightness of the word. When Julia had first disappeared, everyone talked about how tragic it was that something bad had happened to such a good girl. Then the sheriff had floated his theory that Julia had just walked away, joined a hippie commune, or run off with a guy, and the tone had changed from sympathetic to accusatory. Julia Carroll was no longer the selfless girl who volunteered at an animal shelter and worked at the soup kitchen. She was the strident political activist who'd been jailed at a protest, the pushy reporter who alienated the entire staff of the school newspaper, the radical feminist who demanded the university hire more women, the drunk, the pothead, the whore. It wasn't enough for Julia to be taken away from the family. All the good things about her had to be taken away, too. Lydia told Claire,
"I lied about where I was the night she disappeared. I was passed out in the alley."
Claire looked surprised. The alley was a seedy passageway that connected the Georgia Bar to the Roadhouse, two Athens dives that catered to underage townies. Lydia had told the sheriff she was practicing with the band in Lee Dean's garage the night Julia went missing, when, in actuality, she'd been just a stone's throw away from her sister. Instead of pointing out the proximity, Claire told her, "I said I was studying with Bonnie Flynn, but actually we were making out." Lydia choked on a laugh. She had forgotten how good Claire was at tossing out shocking statements.
"And?"
"I liked her brother better." Claire picked up a piece of egg between her thumb and finger, but she didn't eat it. "I saw you on the road this afternoon. I was parked in front of the McDonald's. You were stopped at the light." Lydia felt the hair on her neck go up. She remembered stopping at a red light by the McDonald's on the way to the cemetery. She'd had no idea that someone was watching her.
"I didn't see you."
"I know. I followed you for about 20 minutes. I don't know what I was thinking. I wasn't surprised when you ended up at the cemetery. It seemed fitting. A bookend." Paul split us apart. Why wouldn't he bring us back together? She pushed away the plate. "Not that I think you'll ever forgive me, and you shouldn't because I was never going to forgive you." Lydia wasn't sure forgiveness was in her wheelhouse.
"What made you believe me after all this time?"
Claire didn't answer. She was staring at the half-finished food on her plate. "I loved him. I know you don't want to believe that, but I really, truly, giddy, heartbreaking, longing, achingly loved him." Lydia said nothing. "I'm so angry with myself because it was all right in front of me, and I never thought to question it." Lydia got the distinct feeling that the conversation had shifted to something else. She asked a question that had been fermenting in the back of her mind.
"If Paul's business partner settled out of court, why is the FBI still bothering you? There's no criminal case. It's over."
Claire's jaw worked. She was gritting her teeth.
"Are you going to answer me?"
"This is the part that's dangerous." She paused. "Or maybe not. I don't know. But it's almost midnight. I'm sure you want to go home. I had no right to ask you over here in the first place."
"Then why did you?"
"Because I'm selfish. And because you are the only person left in my life who was ever capable of making anything better." Lydia knew that Paul had been the other person. She didn't appreciate the association.
"What did he do to you, Claire?"
Claire looked down at the counter. She wasn't wearing makeup, but she wiped underneath her eyes in the careful way you did when you were wearing mascara. He was watching these movies. Not just porn, but violent porn.
The only thing that surprised Lydia was that Claire actually cared.
I'm not taking up for him, but men watch all kinds of weird shit.
It wasn't weird, Liddy. It was violent and graphic. A woman is murdered, and this man in a leather mask rapes her while she's dying.
Lydia covered her mouth with her hand. She was speechless.
There are 20 short films, vignettes, I guess, of two different women. They're both tortured and electrocuted and burned and branded like cattle. I can't even describe the other things that are done to them. The first girl is murdered.
She gripped her hands together.
The second girl looks like Anna Kilpatrick.
Lydia's heart quivered like a harp string.
You have to call the police.
I did more than that. I took all of the movies to the cops, and they said they were fake, but...
She looked up at Lydia, her face a study in devastation.
I don't think they're fake, Liddy. I think the first woman was really killed. And the girl... I'm not sure. I just don't know anymore.
Let me see them.
No.
Claire vehemently shook her head.
You can't watch them. They're awful. You'll never be able to unsee them.
The words reminded Lydia of her father. Toward the end of his life, he'd often said that about Julia, that there were just some things that you couldn't unsee. Still, she had to know.
Lydia insisted. I want to see the girl who looks like Anna Kilpatrick.
Claire started to argue the point, but she obviously wanted a second opinion.
You can't play the movie. You can only look at her face.
Lydia would play the damn movie if she wanted to.
Where is it?
Claire reluctantly stood from the bar. She led Lydia to the mudroom and opened the side door. There was a piece of wood where the window should have been.
Claire explained.
There was a break-in on the day of the funeral.
Nothing was taken. The caterers stopped them.
Were they looking for the movies?
Claire turned around, surprised.
I never even considered it. The police said there's a gang that trawls obituaries looking for houses to rob during funerals.
Lydia had a vague recollection of hearing something similar on the news, but it was still a weird coincidence. They walked across the large motor court toward the garage, which was twice the size of Lydia's house. One of the bay doors was already open. The first thing Lydia saw was a cabinet on its side, then a set of broken golf clubs, hand tools, machinery, paint cans, tennis rackets. The garage had been completely ransacked.
This is my own apeshittery, Claire said, not elaborating. The burglars didn't make it into the garage.
You did this?
I know, Claire said, as if they were gossiping about another person.
Lydia stepped carefully because her shoes were back inside the house. She braced her hand against a BMW X5 as she stepped over the toppled cabinet. There was a beautiful charcoal Porsche that looked like someone had taken a hammer to it. The silver Tesla had pockmarks on the hood. She was fairly certain that, even in their damaged states, any one of these cars could pay off her mortgage. Claire jumped right into the story.
There was a Thunderbolt cable that went upstairs. Paul drilled a hole in the floor so it could plug directly into his computer.
Lydia looked up at the ceiling. The sheetrock had been broken open.
Claire said, I couldn't stay up there anymore. Paul's MacBook was in the Tesla's front trunk. I got it out and put it here, and then got the cable out of the wall so I could plug it in.
She was almost breathless, the same way she used to get when she was little and wanted to tell Lydia something that had happened at school.
I did a search on the laptop to see if there were any more movies. I didn't find anything, though, who knows. Paul was very good with computers. Then again, he never really bothered to hide anything because he knew that I would never look, she told Lydia. I trusted him. Lydia followed the destruction to a silver MacBook Pro that was set up on the workbench. Claire had used a hammer to punch out the sheetrock, which Lydia knew because the hammer was still stuck in the wall. A thin, white cable hung down like a piece of string. Claire had plugged it into the laptop. Look back there. Claire pointed behind the workbench. You can see the light from the external hard drive. Lydia had to push up onto her toes to see what she meant. She craned her neck. There was the flashing light. The drive was embedded in the wall. The niche was professionally built out, including a trim detail. If Lydia stared long enough, she could almost see the schematic in her head. I had no idea it was there. All of this, Claire indicated the garage. This entire building was designed to hide his secrets. She paused, studying Lydia. Are you really sure you want to see it? For the first time, Lydia felt real trepidation about the movies. Back in the house, what Claire had described sounded terrible. But Lydia had somehow convinced herself that they couldn't be that bad. Rick and Dee loved watching horror movies. Lydia assumed the vignettes couldn't be any worse. Now, faced with the level of Paul's deception, she understood that Claire was probably right. The movies were far worse than anything Lydia could imagine. Still, she said, "Yes." Claire opened the laptop. She turned the screen away from Lydia. She moved her finger along the trackpad until she found what she was looking for. Then she gave it a click. This is the best view of her face. Lydia hesitated, but then she saw the girl on the screen. She was chained to a wall. Her body was torn up. There was no better way to describe what had been done to her. Skin was rent. Burns gaped like open sores. She had been branded. There was a large X burned into her belly, slightly off-center, just below her ribs. Lydia tasted fear in her mouth. She could practically smell the burning flesh. It's too much. Claire tried to close the laptop. Lydia stopped her hand. Every part of her body was responding to the unnatural acts on the screen. She felt ill. She was sweating. Even her eyes hurt. This was not like any horror movie she had ever seen. The signs of torture weren't meant to scare the viewer. They were meant to arouse. Liddy?
I'm okay.
Her voice was muffled. At some point, she'd put her hand over her mouth. Lydia realized that she'd been so overwhelmed by the violence that she hadn't even looked at the girl's face. At first glance, she looked an awful lot like Anna Kilpatrick. Lydia stepped closer. She leaned down and almost touched her nose to the display. There was a magnifying glass by the laptop. She used it to take an even closer look. Finally, Lydia said, I can't tell either. I mean, yes, she looks like Anna, but lots of girls that age look alike. Lydia didn't tell Claire that all of Dee's friends looked the same. Instead, she put down the magnifying glass. What did the police say? He said it wasn't Anna. Not that I asked the question, because I didn't pick up on the similarity until I was at the police station. But now that it's in my head, I can't get it out. What do you mean you didn't ask the question? It never occurred to me that she looked like Anna Kilpatrick. But that was the first thing Captain Mayhew said when I showed him the movie. It's not Anna Kilpatrick. The guy in charge of the Kilpatrick case is named Jacob Mayhew. He's got a huckleberry mustache. I saw him on the news tonight. That's him. Captain Jacob Mayhew.
Anna Kilpatrick's all over the news. Why would the guy in charge of finding her stop everything to work on a house robbery?
Claire chewed her lip. Maybe he assumed I was showing him the movie because I knew he was investigating the Kilpatrick case.
She met Lydia's gaze straight on.
He told me that she's dead.
Lydia had assumed as much, but having it confirmed didn't make it any easier. Even with Julia, who had been gone so long that it wasn't possible she was still alive, Lydia always held out a tiny sliver of hope.
Have they found her body?
They found blood in her car. Mayhew said the volume was too much, that she couldn't live without it.
But the news didn't say that. Lydia knew she was grasping at straws. Her family's still making pleas for her safe return.
How many years did Mom and Dad do the same thing?
They were both quiet, both probably thinking their own thoughts about Julia. Lydia could still remember Sheriff Huckabee telling her parents that if Julia hadn't walked away on her own, she was most likely dead. Helen had slapped him across the face. Sam had threatened to sue the sheriff's department into oblivion if they even thought about suspending the investigation. Lydia felt a lump in her throat. She struggled to clear it. There was more that Claire wasn't telling her. She was either trying to protect Lydia or trying to protect herself.
I want you to start from the beginning and tell me everything that's happened.
Are you sure?
Lydia waited. Claire leaned against the workbench.
I guess it started when we got back from the funeral.
Claire ran it down for her, from finding the movies on Paul's computer to Nolan's intrusive questions to her decision to hand everything over to the police. Lydia asked her to repeat herself when she described Mayhew's less than casual curiosity about whether or not Claire had made copies of the movies. And then she got to the part about Adam Quinn leaving the threatening note on her car, and Lydia couldn't keep silent anymore. She asked, "What files is he talking about?"
"I'm not sure. Work files? Paul's secret files? Something to do with the money Paul stole?"
She shook her head.
"I still can't understand that. Nolan was right about us being flush. Why steal something you don't need?"
Lydia held back her response. "Why try to rape someone when you had a beautiful, willing girlfriend back home?" Instead, she asked, "Did you check Paul's laptop for a work-in-progress folder?" Claire's blank expression answered the question.
"I was just worried about finding more movies."
She leaned over the MacBook and started searching the drive. The work-in-progress folder came up immediately. They both scanned the file names. Claire said, "These extensions are for an architectural software. You can tell by the dates that Paul was working on them the day that he was murdered."
"What's an extension?"
"It's the letters that come after the period in a file name. They tell you what the file format is, like .jpg is for photographs and .pdf is for printed documents."
She clicked open each of the files. There was a drawing of a staircase, some windows, elevations.
"Conceptual drawings, they're all for work."
Lydia considered their options. "Make copies of the files for Adam Quinn. If he leaves you alone, then you know he's not involved."
Claire seemed astonished by the simple solution.
She opened the door to the Tesla and grabbed a set of keys that had been tossed onto the dashboard.
"I bought Paul this keychain when Auburn went to the BCS Bowl. There's a USB drive inside."
Lydia wondered if her sister knew how light her voice sounded when she talked about her life with Paul. It was almost like Claire was two different people. The woman who loved and believed in her husband, and the woman who knew he was a monster. Lydia told her, "I don't want you seeing Adam alone. Text him that you'll leave it in the mailbox."
"That's a good idea."
Claire was trying to pry open the split metal keyring with her thumbnail. I have a burner phone in the house. Lydia didn't ask her why she had a burner phone. Instead, she went to the laptop and clicked all of the architectural files closed. She stared at the paused movie on the computer screen. The girl's eyes were wide with fear. Her lips were parted, as if she was about to start screaming. Part of Lydia was tempted to play the movie out just to see how bad it would get. Lydia closed the movie. The Gladiator Drive showed in the Finder. She studied the file names, which were numbers, just as Claire had said. There has to be a pattern to these. I couldn't figure it out. Fuck! Claire had split her fingernail on the metal ring. Aren't there a million tools in here? Claire scrounged around until she found a screwdriver. She sat cross-legged on the floor while she jammed apart the keyring with a metal file. Lydia studied the file names again. There had to be a code that would explain the numbers. Instead of offering a solution, she said, Agent Nolan made a point tonight about watching movies. If he meant Paul's movies, how would he know about them? Claire looked up. Maybe he's into them, too.
He seems like the type, Lydia said, though she was only guessing.
Why was he here for a house robbery? That's the big question. No one wanted him here. Mayhew clearly can't stand him. So what was Nolan looking for?
If Mayhew is involved...
Then why put pressure on me? Claire sounded exasperated. I don't know anything. Why Paul watched the movies, who else watched them, what Mayhew knows, what Nolan knows or doesn't know. I feel like I'm running around in circles.
Lydia felt the same way, and she'd only been doing this for a few hours.
Claire said, Nolan flirts with me, right? The way he looked at me tonight, like he was checking me out. You picked up on that.
Yes.
He's creepy, right?
He was beyond creepy, but Lydia just said, I guess.
Ha! Claire stood, holding up the separated key tag in triumph. The plastic medallion was imprinted with the orange and blue logo of Auburn University. Claire pulled it apart, then shoved the USB connector into the laptop. She clicked open the drive. Lydia saw that it was empty save for the software folder. She breathed a sigh of relief.
Thank God.
No kidding. Claire copied the work-in-progress folder onto the drive. I hope these are the files Adam was talking about. I don't think I can take it if they're not. Lydia noticed a striking similarity between the way she talked about Paul and the way she talked about Adam Quinn. And then she remembered something Nolan had intimated as they all stood at the front door.
You were sleeping with Adam Quinn.
Claire shrugged with feigned innocence. My court-appointed therapist would say I was trying to fill a hole.
Is that what you call your vagina?
Claire chuckled under her breath.
Unbelievable,
Lydia muttered, though history told her it was completely believable. When Rick had asked Lydia to tell him about Claire, she had left out the part about her sister being sexually liberated. Not that Claire was sloppy about it. She was remarkably adept at compartmentalizing everyone in her life. Her townie friends never met her college friends. Her cheerleading friends never mixed with her track club friends. And hardly anyone knew she was on the tennis team. None of them would have ever guessed she was sleeping around, especially whichever man she was dating at the time. Finished. Claire ejected the USB drive. All right, that's at least one thing that's done. Lydia didn't care about Adam Quinn anymore. Some component in the back of her brain had been working the puzzle of Paul's code, and she finally understood what he'd done. The movie names. They're coded dates. She turned to Claire. Like, if a file was named 12345. The code would be 15243. You take the first number, then the last number, then the second number, then the second from the last number, and you work your way into the middle until they're all accounted for. Claire was already nodding. So November 1st, 2015 is 11-01-2015, which would make the code 15110012.
Exactly. She pointed to the screen. The last file on the list is the first movie with the girl who looks like Anna Kilpatrick.
Lydia translated the date.
It was made a day after she went missing.
Claire leaned heavily on the workbench.
This is how it's been for the last 2 days. Every time I convince myself the movies aren't real, something else comes along, and I think maybe they are.
Lydia had to play devil's advocate.
I'm not taking up for Paul.
But so what if it's real? There's all kinds of shit on the internet showing people being shot or beheaded or raped or whatever. It's disgusting to watch it. And if Paul knew it was Anna Kilpatrick, he should have reported it to the police. But it's not illegal to just shut up and watch it.
Claire seemed battered by the brutal truth behind Lydia's words. She tucked her chin down the same way Dee did when she didn't want to talk about something.
Claire?
She shook her head.
If it's not illegal, then why does Nolan keep coming here? And why did Mayhew act so weird when he asked me if I made any copies?
Maybe Nolan's just a prick, and he can't stand it that Paul got away with breaking the law.
Lydia had to give Captain Mayhew's part a bit more thought.
Mayhew could be trying to protect you. That's what men do around you. They always have. But let's say the movies are real. So what?
Saying those two words a second time made Lydia realize how awful she sounded. Because these women were human beings with families.
Still, she had to push on.
Worst case scenario, Mayhew was trying to keep you from thinking your husband is morally bankrupt.
Paul was morally bankrupt.
Claire spoke with deadly cold conviction.
I found more files. Paper files.
Lydia felt panic wind up inside of her chest like a watch.
Paul kept them upstairs in his office. 2 big boxes of files and God knows what else.
I recognized one of the names on the labels.
Claire's gaze shifted to the side the same way it did when she was little and she was trying to hide something.
What name did you recognize?
Claire looked down at her hands. She was picking the cuticle on her thumb.
The woman's name was familiar to me. I saw her on the news, a story. I mean, not actually her. She came forward because normally the news wouldn't print. I mean, interview.
Claire, use your words.
Claire still would not look up.
Paul was collecting information on a lot of women. And I know that at least one of the women was raped.
How do you know?
Claire finally looked her in the eye.
I saw her name on the news. I don't know her. Paul never mentioned her to me. She's just this stranger who's been raped. And Paul has a file on her. And he has a lot of files on other women, too.
Lydia felt a sudden cold come over her body.
What kind of information was he collecting?
Where they work, who they date, where they go. He hired private detectives to follow them without their knowledge. There are pictures and reports and background checks.
Claire obviously felt cold, too. She stuck her hands deep into her front pockets.
From what I saw, he checks in on them once a year, the same time every year, and I keep asking myself, Why would he have them followed if not for a reason? And what if that reason is that he raped all of them? Lydia felt like a hummingbird was trapped in her throat.
Does he have a file on me?
No. Lydia studied her carefully. Claire had always held on to secrets like a cat. Was she lying? Could Lydia trust her about something so important? They're in my office. Claire hesitated. Not that I'm saying you should look at them, I mean... She shrugged. I don't know what I mean. I'm sorry I've pulled you into this. You can still go. You should probably go. Lydia looked down the driveway. Rick's truck was parked in a turnaround by the front of the house. He wouldn't let Lydia drive the van until he changed the wiper blades, which kindness she had returned by letting a special agent with the FBI record his license plate number. Rick had crossed paths with the various law enforcement agencies during his time as a heroin addict because he'd managed to sell almost as much as he'd used. Nolan would need to block out a few hours to read his rap sheet. And then, what would he do? Go to the gas station and harass Rick until his boss had to let him go? Swing by the house to interrogate him and maybe run a check on his neighbors and find out that Lydia lived next door? And then Dee would be pulled into it. And the mothers would find out, and the people who worked at Lydia's shop would be harassed, and maybe her clients, who would make lame apologies about how they couldn't let a woman being investigated by the FBI give their poodle a sanitary shave because it was too complicated. Pepper? Claire had her arms crossed low on her waist. You should go. I mean it this time. I can't involve you in this. I'm already in it up to my neck. Pepper. Lydia climbed her way back through the garage. Instead of going down the driveway, she headed toward the house. She had dealt with her share of cops, too. They were sharks looking for blood, and by the sound of it, Claire had two boxes of chum in her office that might just get Agent Fred Nolan off all of their backs. Chapter 9. Claire slumped down into the overstuffed chair in her office as she watched her sister go through Paul's collection of files. Lydia seemed energized by the prospect of uncovering more lurid details, but Claire felt as though she was suffocating under the weight of every new revelation. She couldn't believe that only 2 days ago she had watched Paul's coffin as it was lowered into the ground. Her body might as well have been buried along with him. Her skin felt desiccated. She had a deep chill in her bones. Even blinking was a challenge, because the temptation to keep her eyes closed was almost too much to resist. She stared at the burner phone in her hand. At 12:31 in the morning, Adam had responded to her text about the files with a short, "Okay." Claire didn't know what that okay meant. The USB drive was waiting for him in the mailbox. Was Adam reserving his judgment until he saw what was on it? She dropped the phone on the side table. She was sick of all these unanswered questions, and angry that instead of grieving for her husband, she was questioning her own sanity for loving him in the first place. Lydia clearly had no such reservations. She was sitting on the floor going through the plastic boxes, her expression the same as every Halloween night they'd shared as kids. She had the colored folder stacked by name on the floor in front of her. The colors corresponded to years, which meant that over the last 6 years, Paul had paid to have 18 women stalked. Or worse. Claire did not tell Lydia that this was likely the tip of the iceberg. While they were out in the garage, she had remembered the storage room in the basement under the main house.
Claire had forgotten about the room because she'd only seen it once when they first moved in. This fact would probably sound unbelievable to Lydia, but the basement was huge. There was a screening room, a full gym, a locker room with sauna and steam room, a massage room, a wine cellar, a billiards room with both a pool table and a ping pong table, a guest suite with full bath, a caterer's kitchen at the base of the elevator, a stocked bar, and a seating area large enough to comfortably accommodate 20 people. Was it any wonder that Claire had forgotten about a room the size of a jail holding area? Paul was too organized to be called a hoarder, but he liked to keep things. Claire had always chalked up his collections to having lost everything when his parents died. But now, she was seeing a more sinister motivation. He'd built shelves downstairs in the storage closet to hold the many plastic file boxes that he'd been filling since his time at Auburn. When they'd first moved into the house, he'd shown Claire the artifacts he'd kept from their early years. The first birthday card she'd ever given him. A note scribbled on paper that recorded the first time she'd ever written him the words, "I love you." At the time, Claire had found his collection awfully sweet. But now, all she could think about was that there were dozens of boxes down there. And that 3 women a year for the last 18 years would mean 54 more folders filled with 54 more unspeakable violations. There was one file that Lydia would never see. Her sister was disturbed enough by the contents of the folders. If she found out that Paul had done the same to her, there would be no going back. "Are you all right?" Lydia looked up from the report she was reading. "Do you want to go lie down?" "I'm fine," Claire said, but her eyelids felt heavy. Her body was so tired that her hands were trembling. She had read somewhere or heard somewhere that criminals always go to sleep after they confess their crimes. Concealing their bad acts took up so much energy that having the truth laid bare brought on a deep, sweet sleep. Had she confessed to Lydia? Or had she just shared a burden? Claire closed her eyes. Her breathing got deeper. She was awake. She could still hear Lydia greedily thumbing through pages. But she was also asleep. And in that sleep, she felt herself dipping into a dream. There was no narrative, just fragments of a typical day. She was at her desk paying bills. She was practicing the piano. She was in the kitchen trying to come up with a grocery list. She was making phone calls to raise money for the Christmas toy drive. She was studying the shoes in her closet, trying to put together an outfit to wear to lunch. Through all of this, she could feel Paul's presence in the house. They were very independent people. They'd always had their own interests, done their own things. But Claire always felt reassured when Paul was close by. Light bulbs would be changed. Faults would be cleared from the security system. The remote control would be deciphered. Trash would be taken out. Clothes would be folded. Batteries would be charged. Big spoons and little spoons would never mingle in the silverware drawer. He was such a sturdy, capable man. She liked that he was taller than she was. She liked that she had to look up at him when they were dancing. She liked the way she felt when his arms were around her. He was so much stronger than Claire. Sometimes he would pick her up. She would feel her feet lift off the ground. His chest felt so solid against hers. He would tease her about something silly, and she would laugh because she knew that he loved hearing her laugh. And then he would say, "Tell me you want this." Claire jerked awake. Her arms flew up as if to ward off a blow. Her throat felt scratchy. Her heart
clicked against her ribs. Morning sun streamed into her office. Lydia was gone. The plastic boxes were empty. The files were gone. Claire lunged toward her desk. She opened the drawer. Lydia's file was still hidden inside. Claire's relief was so pronounced that she wanted to cry. She touched her fingers to her cheek. She was crying. Her tear ducts were on constant standby for anything that would send them over. Instead of giving in to it, Claire shut the drawer. She wiped her eyes. She stood up. She straightened her shirt as she made her way to the kitchen. She heard Lydia's voice before she saw her. She was obviously talking on the phone. "Because I want you to stay at Rick's tonight." Lydia paused. "Because I said so." She paused again. "Sweetheart, I know you're an adult, but adults are like vampires. The older ones are much more powerful." Claire smiled. She had known Lydia would be a good mother. She sounded just like Helen before Julia disappeared. "All right. I love you too." Claire stayed in the hallway long after Lydia had ended the call. She didn't want her sister to have any fears about being overheard. If Claire was going to continue to lie about knowing every single detail of Lydia's life, she could at least do a good job. She smoothed down the back of her hair as she walked into the kitchen. "Hey." Lydia was sitting at the bar. She was wearing reading glasses, which would have been funny if Claire wasn't a couple of years away from needing them herself. Paul's files were scattered across the kitchen island. Lydia had Claire's iPad in front of her. She took off the reading glasses as she asked, "Did you sleep all right?" "I'm sorry." Claire didn't know what she was apologizing for. There were so many things to choose from. "I should have helped you go through all of this."
"No, you should have gotten some sleep."
Lydia started to lean back in the chair, but she caught herself before she fell over the low back.
"These are the stupidest chairs I've ever sat in."
"Well, they look good," Claire said, because that was all that had ever mattered to Paul. She went to the video screen on the kitchen wall. The flashing time read 6:03. She pulled up the mailbox camera. Adam hadn't been by yet. Claire didn't know what to make of that because she still didn't know which files Adam was after. She told Lydia, "The USB drive is still in the mailbox."
"You have a camera in your mailbox?"
"Doesn't everybody?" Lydia gave a sour look.
"What was the name of the woman you saw on the news?"
Claire shook her head. She didn't understand.
"In the garage, you said that you recognized a woman's name from one of the files because you had seen her on the news. I looked them all up on your iPad. Only two had news items."
Claire spitballed an explanation. "She was in Atlanta."
"Leslie Lewis?"
Lydia pushed an open file folder across the counter so that Claire could see the woman's photograph. She was blonde and pretty and wearing thick black glasses.
"I found a story about her in the Atlanta Journal archives. She was staying in a hotel during Dragon Con. She thought she was opening her door for room service, but a guy pushed his way in and raped her."
Claire looked away from the woman's photo. Quinn and Scott's downtown offices were near the convention site. Last year, Paul had sent her pictures of drunken people dressed like Darth Vader and the Green Lantern clogging the street. Lydia slid over another file. Another pretty young blonde.
"Pam Clayton. There was a story in the Patch. She was jogging near Stone Mountain Park. The attacker dragged her into the woods. It was after 7, but it was August, so it was still light out."
Paul's tennis team occasionally had games in the park. "Look at the dates on the files. He hired the detectives to follow them on the anniversaries of their rapes." Claire took her word for it. She didn't want to read any more details.
Did the attacker say anything to either of them?
If he did, it wasn't in the articles. We need the police reports.
Claire wondered why Paul hadn't asked the private detectives to track down the reports.
Lydia's file contained her arrest records and all the ancillary paperwork.
Maybe Paul figured it was a bad idea to tip his hand by asking all of these different detectives to check up on all of these women who had been raped. Or maybe he didn't need the reports because he already knew exactly what had happened to them. Or maybe he was getting the reports from Captain Jacob Mayhew.
Claire?
She shook her head, but now that she had the thought in her mind, she couldn't get rid of it. Why hadn't she studied Mayhew's expression while he watched the movies? Then again, what good would it do? Hadn't she learned enough about Paul's duplicity to realize that her judgment could not be trusted?
Claire?
Lydia waited for her attention.
Did you notice something about the women?
Claire shook her head again.
They all look like you.
Claire didn't point out that that meant they looked like Lydia, too.
So, what now?
We're holding these women's lives in our hands. We don't know if we can trust Mayhew. Even if we did, he didn't take the movies seriously. Why would he investigate the files?
Lydia shrugged.
We can call Nolan.
Claire couldn't believe what she was suggesting.
Better these women than us, you mean?
I wouldn't put it like that, but now that you...
They've already been raped. You want to sick that asshole on them, too?
Lydia shrugged.
Maybe it'll give them some peace knowing that the man who attacked them isn't around anymore.
That's a bullshit excuse. Claire was adamant. We know firsthand what Nolan is like. He probably won't even believe them. Or worse, he'll flirt with them like he flirts with me. There's a reason most women don't go to the cops when they're raped.
What are you going to do, write them a check?
Claire walked into the family room before she said something she would regret. Writing some checks didn't sound like a bad idea. Paul had attacked these women. The least she could do was pay for therapy or whatever else they needed.
Lydia said, If Paul had actually raped me, and I found out that every September for almost 18 years he'd been stalking me, taking pictures of me, I would want to grab a gun and kill him.
Claire stared at the Rothko over the fireplace. What would you do if you found out that he was already dead and there was nothing you could do about it?
I would still want to know.
Claire felt no temptation to reveal the truth.
Lydia had always blustered about how tough she was, but there was a reason she was already numbing herself with drugs at the age of 16.
Claire said, I can't do it. I won't do it.
I know you don't want to hear it, but it makes me glad to know he's dead. And to know how he died, even though it must have been rotten for you.
Rotten, Claire repeated, thinking the word was borderline insulting.
Rotten was being late for a movie or losing a great parking space. Watching your husband get stabbed and bleed to death in front of your own eyes was fucking excruciating.
No, I won't do it.
Fine.
Lydia started grabbing folders and stacking them together. She was clearly angry. But Claire wasn't going to back down. She knew what it was like to be the focus of Fred Nolan's interest. She couldn't unleash that on Paul's victims. There was already enough guilt on her conscience without throwing these poor women into the lion's den. She walked farther into the family room. The sunlight was blinding. Claire closed her eyes for a moment and let the heat from the sun warm her face. And then she turned away, because it seemed wrong to enjoy something so basic, considering all of the misery they had uncovered.
Her gaze traveled to the area behind one of the couches.